Hello dear students, welcome to BIC's audio learning sessions. In this session we are going to understand about the concepts from the chapter of breathing and exchange of gases. So now let's understand first what is breathing. Breathing is the process of exchange of oxygen from the atmosphere with carbon dioxide produced by the cells in the body. I repeat, what is breathing? Breathing is a process of exchange of oxygen from the atmosphere with carbon dioxide produced by the cells in the body. Then what is respiration? Respiration is the process of oxidation of nutrients in the living cells to release energy for carrying out biological work. I repeat, process of oxidation of nutrients in the living cells to release energy for carrying out biological work. Next, let's understand about the different respiratory organs present in different organisms. Different organisms have different organs for undertaking the process of respiration, and it depends on their habitats and the level of the organization of their body. Invertebrates like sponges, coelenterates, flatworms, etc. exchange oxygen with carbon dioxide by the process of simple diffusion over the entire body surface. So what is their organ of respiration? General body surface is the organ of respiration for lower invertebrates like sponges, coelenterates and flatworms. Earthworms use their moist skin for diffusion of air in and out of the body, and this process we call it as cutaneous respiration. And not only earthworm, this process is also seen in leech, some amphibians, etc. So what is the type of respiratory organ there in them? Cutaneous respiration. Next, insects have a network of tubes called tracheal tubes to carry out the exchange of oxygen and carbon dioxide. What is the organ of respiration in the insects? It is the tracheal tubes. Next, in fish, gills are present. So organ of respiration in fish, tadpole and prawn is gills, also called branchial respiration. And in reptiles, birds and mammals, respiration is happening with the help of lungs, which is called pulmonary respiration as well. And in fact, mammals have very well developed respiratory system. So that's about the introduction of breathing, respiration and different respiratory organs found in different organisms. In the next episode, we are going to learn about human respiratory system in detail. Keep listening. Keep learning. All the best. Hello dear students, welcome to this audio learning session of BIC on the chapter of breathing and exchange of gases. In this episode, we are going to learn more about transport of gases. Let's begin. Blood is a medium of transport of oxygen and carbon dioxide. About 97% of oxygen is transported by RBCs in the blood. The remaining 3% of oxygen is carried in dissolved state through the plasma. Nearly 20 to 25% of carbon dioxide is transported by RBCs, whereas 70% of it is carried as a bicarbonate, that is sodium bicarbonate. About 7% of carbon dioxide is carried in a dissolved state through plasma. Now, before we get into the actual concept of transport of oxygen, let's quickly understand about gaseous exchange or gas exchange. Gas exchange occurs between alveoli and blood in the first part, and in the second part circulating blood and the tissue cells. First, let us understand the exchange of gases between alveoli of lungs and blood. Alveoli are the primary sites of gas exchange. Oxygen and carbon dioxide are exchanged by the process of simple diffusion. And this process of diffusion depends upon the factors like pressure, concentration gradient, solubility of gases, thickness of membrane, surface area. Let's now understand regarding pressure concentration gradient, which is understandable by the concept of partial pressures. What is partial pressure? It's a complete pressure exerted by an individual gas in a mixture of gas. Now, because there are two gases here, oxygen and carbon dioxide, we always need to talk with the term as partial pressure. We need to understand some very important numerical values of the partial pressures of oxygen and carbon dioxide, which is measured in mm of mercury. Let's first get the detail about it. In the atmospheric air, partial pressure of oxygen is 159, whereas that of carbon dioxide is 0.3 mm of mercury. As I already told you, the unit of measurement is in mm of mercury. And in the alveoli, partial pressure of oxygen is 104 mm of mercury and that of carbon dioxide is 40 mm of mercury. And in the deoxygenated blood, partial pressure of oxygen is 40 mm of mercury while that of carbon dioxide is 45 mm of mercury. In the oxygenated blood, the partial pressure of oxygen is 95 mm of mercury and that of carbon dioxide is 40 mm of mercury. And in the tissues, partial pressure of oxygen is 40 mm of mercury and the partial pressure of carbon dioxide is 45 mm of mercury. So this difference in the partial pressures helps for the gaseous exchange. Partial pressure of oxygen in alveoli is more than 104 mm mercury than in the blood capillaries, which is 40 mm of mercury. So, oxygen diffuses into the capillary blood. Partial pressure of carbon dioxide in deoxygenated blood is more, that is to the tune of 45 mm mercury, than in the alveoli of the lungs, which is 40 mm of mercury. As a result, carbon dioxide diffuses from the deoxygenated blood into the alveoli of the lung. So, the first factor which is playing a role in deciding about the gaseous exchange is that partial pressures or the pressure gradient. The next factor is solubility of the gases, thickness of membrane and surface area of lungs. All of them play a vital role. It is observed that carbon dioxide is 20 to 25 times higher soluble than that of oxygen. Next, thickness of membrane. The diffusion membrane is made up of three layers: thin squamous epithelium of alveoli, endothelium of alveolar capillaries, and basement substance present between the alveoli, squamous epithelium, and endothelium of alveolar capillaries. And the total thickness of this membrane is about 0.5 micrometer, 10 to the power minus 6 meter. It enables easy exchange of gases. Finally, the surface area, which is going to affect the gaseous exchange. Presence of alveoli in the lung increases the surface area of lungs, which thereby increases the gaseous exchange. So, they are the important focus points. Now, let's understand regarding the transport of oxygen first. Oxygen transport is nothing but the transport of oxygen from lungs to various tissues. It occurs in two different ways. One is in the physical solution, that is in the blood plasma, and one more as oxyhemoglobin in the blood. First, let us understand about the transportation of oxygen in physical solution, that is in the blood plasma. About 3% of oxygen is carried in a dissolved state through plasma. And as oxyhemoglobin, about 97% of oxygen is transported by RBC. Oxygen binds with hemoglobin, the red colored pigment which carries iron in it, is having lot of affinity towards oxygen. So hemoglobin carries oxygen by binding oxygen onto it to form oxyhemoglobin. This is called oxygenation. Hemoglobin has 4 heme units. So each hemoglobin molecule can carry 4 oxygen molecules. Binding of oxygen depends upon partial pressure of oxygen, partial pressure of carbon dioxide and hydrogen ion concentration, which is directly responsible for pH and the temperature. Now there is an equation to understand this. Hb4, that is 4 molecules of hemoglobin plus 4 molecules of oxygen, 4O2, in high partial pressure of oxygen and low partial pressure of carbon dioxide in the lungs, gets converted into Hb4O8, that is oxyhemoglobin. Oxyhemoglobin gives away hemoglobin and oxygen at low partial pressure of oxygen and high partial pressure of carbon dioxide, which is the case in tissues. In the alveoli, high partial pressure of oxygen, low partial pressure of carbon dioxide and lesser hydrogen ion concentration and lower temperature exist. These factors favors for the formation of oxyhemoglobin. I repeat, in the alveoli of the lungs, there is high partial pressure of oxygen, the values we already discussed, and there is low partial pressure of carbon dioxide and lesser hydrogen ion concentration and low temperature. All of this enable for the formation of oxyhemoglobin. In the tissues, low partial pressure of oxygen, high partial pressure of carbon dioxide and high hydrogen ion concentration and high temperature exists. As a result, the oxyhemoglobin molecule dissociates, releasing oxygen. Every 100 ml of oxygenated blood can deliver around 5 ml of oxygen to the tissues under normal physiological conditions. Now let's understand regarding oxygen hemoglobin dissociation curve. It's very important. It's a sigmoid curve, that means it's a S-shaped curve obtained when percentage saturation of hemoglobin with oxygen is plotted against partial pressure of oxygen. It is useful to study the effect of factors like partial pressure of carbon dioxide, hydrogen ion concentration, etc., the binding of oxygen with hemoglobin, so on and so forth. So on the x-axis, we will be taking partial pressure of oxygen measured in mm of mercury, and upon the y-axis, the saturation of hemoglobin. So when we draw the curve, it will be a sigmoid curve. Now let's understand regarding carbon dioxide transportation. It involves the transportation of carbon dioxide from tissues to lungs. In tissues, partial pressure of carbon dioxide is high and partial pressure of oxygen is low. In lungs, partial pressure of carbon dioxide is low and partial pressure of oxygen is high. This favors carbon dioxide transport from tissues to lungs. It occurs in 3 ways. The first one is it's transported as carbonic acid. Second is as carbaminohemoglobin. And the third one is as bicarbonates. Let's understand each one of them. First, let's take up the case of transportation of carbon dioxide as carbonic acid. In tissues, about 7% of carbon dioxide is dissolved in plasma water to form carbonic acid, and it is carried to lungs. The second case as carbaminohemoglobin. In tissues, 20-25% of carbon dioxide binds to hemoglobin to form carbaminohemoglobin. In alveoli, carbon dioxide dissociates from carbaminohemoglobin, giving away hemoglobin. The third type of transportation of carbon dioxide as bicarbonates. About 70% of carbon dioxide is transported by this method. That means enormous quantity of carbon dioxide is getting transported as bicarbonates. Red blood cells are the RBCs and the plasma contain an enzyme called carbonic anhydrase. This enzyme facilitates the reactions like the conversion of carbon dioxide to carbonic acid and dissociation of carbonic acid to bicarbonate ion. I go through the equation quickly. CO2 plus H2O in presence of this enzyme carbonic anhydrase gets converted into carbonic acid H2CO3. Thus formed H2CO3 in the presence of carbonic anhydrase forms bicarbonate ion and hydrogen ion HCO3 single minus and H plus. In alveoli, the reaction proceeds in the opposite direction, leading to the formation of carbon dioxide and water. Every 100 ml of deoxygenated blood delivers about 4 ml of carbon dioxide to alveoli. So that's about the transportation of oxygen and carbon dioxide. Keep practicing. All the best. Hello dear students, welcome to this audio learning session of BIC on the chapter of breathing and exchange of gases. In this episode we are going to learn more about the concept of mechanism of breathing. Breathing involves two stages, inspiration and expiration. Now let's understand each one. Inspiration is the stage during which atmospheric air is drawn in, and expiration is the stage of breathing during which alveolar air is released out. So I repeat, inspiration is that stage of breathing in which atmospheric air is drawn in from the atmosphere into the lungs, and expiration is a stage during breathing where the alveolar air, that is from the lungs, the air is released to the atmosphere. In normal breathing, inspiration is the active process while expiration is the passive process. The movement of air in and out of lungs is carried out by creating a pressure gradient between the lungs and the atmosphere. Inspiration can occur if the pressure within the lungs, we also refer by the name as intrapulmonary pressure. If this intrapulmonary pressure is less than the atmospheric pressure, then the inspiration takes place. That is, there is a negative pressure in the lungs with respect to atmospheric pressure. Similarly, expiration takes place when the intrapulmonary pressure is higher than the atmospheric pressure. Now, how is this brought about? Let us see. The diaphragm and a specialized set of muscles, namely external intercostal muscles and internal intercostal muscles, which are present between the ribs, help in the generation of such gradient so that the pressure inside the lungs, that is intrapulmonary pressure, becomes lower or higher as the case may be. Inspiration is initiated by contraction of diaphragm, which increases the volume of thoracic chamber in the anteroposterior axis. Now the diaphragm flattens and comes down, thereby increasing the volume in the thoracic region. During inspiration, diaphragm contracts and it becomes flat. The contraction of external intercostal muscles lifts up the ribs and the sternum, causing an increase in the volume of thoracic chamber in the dorsoventral axis. Important point to remember is, during inspiration, diaphragm and external intercostal muscles contract simultaneously. The overall increase in the thoracic volume causes a similar increase in the pulmonary volume. An increase in the pulmonary volume decreases the intrapulmonary pressure to lesser than the atmospheric pressure, which forces the atmospheric air from outside to move into the lungs. So that's about the mechanism of inspiration. Let's understand some more points involved in the process of inspiration. During inspiration, the lungs acts as a suction pump. Chemical energy is consumed during breathing. Inspiration requires energy for muscle contraction, so therefore it is called active process. Now let us see what happens during expiration. Relaxation of diaphragm and intercostal muscles returns the diaphragm and the sternum to their normal positions, thereby reducing the thoracic volume and thereby reduces the pulmonary volume. This leads to increase in intrapulmonary pressure as the volume decreases, and this increases the pressure inside the lungs to greater than the atmospheric pressure, causing the expulsion of air from the lungs. That is, the process of expiration takes place. During expiration, diaphragm becomes dome-shaped and external intercostal muscle relaxes, and hence expiration is a passive process. Diaphragm and external intercostal muscles are principal muscles of inspiration. Abdominal muscles and internal intercostal muscles are muscles of expiration. Humans have the ability to increase the strength of inspiration and expiration with the help of additional muscles in the abdomen. It's estimated that on an average, a healthy human breathes 12 to 16 times per minute. Breathing rate is lowest during sleeping. Normal breathing is called eupnoia. Apnoea is absence of breathing. If the carbon dioxide concentration in the blood increases, the breathing will also increase. During rest, forced deep breathing for some time is followed by temporary stoppage of breathing because of little carbon dioxide in blood. Increase in carbon dioxide concentration will cause faster and deeper breathing. The volume of air involved in breathing movements can be estimated by using an instrument called spirometer, which helps in clinical assessment of pulmonary functions. So that's about the important points in the concept of mechanism of breathing. In the next episode, let's understand regarding respiratory volume and capacities. All the best. Hello dear students, welcome to this audio episode on the concept of breathing and exchange of gases. In that, we are going to learn about respiratory volumes and capacities. Let us begin. First, let us understand about the term tidal volume. In short, it is called TV. Volume of air inspired or expired during a normal respiration is called tidal volume. It is approximately 500 ml. That is, a healthy man can inspire or expire approximately 6000 to 8000 ml of air per minute. Now let's understand what is dead space. Volume of air which remain in conducting pathway but not available for gaseous exchange in the anatomical regions are called dead space, is called anatomical dead space. Upper respiratory tract is dead space. Dead space is highest in young man than in old man or woman. Dead space air in man is about 150 ml. Whether a child died before birth or after birth can be confirmed by measuring dead space air. Next, let us understand regarding inspiratory reserve volume. Inspiratory reserve volume, in short, we call it as IRV. Additional volume of air a person can inspire by a forcible inspiration is called inspiratory reserve volume. This averages between 2500 ml to 3000 ml. Next term we'll understand is expiratory reserve volume, ERV. That's a short form of it. Additional volume of air a person can expire by forceful expiration is called expiratory reserve volume. This averages about 1000 ml to 1100 ml. Next term, let's understand residual volume, RV is its short form. Volume of air remaining in the lungs even after a forcible expiration is residual volume. This averages about 1100 ml to 1200 ml. Residual air mainly occurs in alveoli. In fact, alveoli provide an efficient system of ventilation with little residual air. By adding up a few respiratory volumes, which we discussed now, we can arrive and derive various pulmonary capacities which can be used in clinical diagnosis. Now let's understand in that concept about inspiratory capacity, which we call it as IC. Now how to arrive at inspiratory capacity? It is total volume of air a person can inspire after normal expiration. This includes tidal volume. Let's understand regarding inspiratory capacity. What is inspiratory capacity? IC is its short form. Total volume of air a person can inspire after normal expiration is called inspiration capacity or inspiratory capacity. This includes tidal volume and inspiratory reserve volume, TV plus IRV. Similarly, let's understand what is expiratory capacity or EC. Total volume of air a person can expire after a normal inspiration is called expiratory capacity. This can be arrived by adding tidal volume and expiratory reserve volume. Next, functional residual capacity, FRC. Volume of air that will remain in the lungs after normal expiration is functional residual capacity. This includes ERV, expiratory reserve volume, plus RV, residual volume. Next, let's understand vital capacity, VC. The maximum volume of air a person can breathe in after a forced expiration. This includes ERV, expiratory reserve volume, TV, tidal volume, IRV, inspiratory reserve volume, or the maximum volume of air a person can breathe out after a forced inspiration. Next term we are going to understand is total lung capacity. Total volume of air accommodated in lungs at the end of a forced inspiration is called total lung capacity. This includes residual volume, expiratory reserve volume, tidal volume, and inspiratory reserve volume, or vital capacity plus residual volume. That means this averages about 5100 to 5800 ml. So let me just go through some important formula. TLC is equal to, total lung capacity is equal to, IC plus FRC. IC, inspiratory capacity, FRC, functional residual capacity. Next formula, VC is equal to, that is vital capacity, is equal to TLC minus RV, total lung capacity minus residual volume. VC can also be calculated, that is vital capacity can also be equal to calculated using IC, inspiratory capacity, plus ERV, expiratory reserve volume. Vital capacity can also be calculated by one more third formula. VC is equal to EC plus IRV. EC means expiratory capacity plus IRV, inspiratory reserve volume. The lowest value is of tidal volume and the highest is of total lung capacity. That's an important focus point to remember. The next episode, let's learn regarding exchange of gases. Keep practicing. All the best. Hello dear students, welcome to BIC's audio learning session. In this episode, we are going to continue our understanding regarding the chapter of breathing and exchange of gases. In that, we are going to understand about, in this episode, human respiratory system. Let's begin. Human respiratory system consists of a pair of air passages, which is otherwise also called air tract and the second part is lungs. So human respiratory system is having two parts in it, namely the air passages, which is otherwise also called air tract, and the second part is lungs. Now let's understand the air passages first. Air passages consists of the conducting part. The conducting part is that part which transports the atmospheric air into the alveoli of the lungs and clears the atmospheric air from foreign particles, and it humidifies the atmospheric air and brings that air to the body temperature. So what are all the functions which have been carried out by the conducting part? I repeat, it transports the atmospheric air into the alveoli of the lungs and clears the atmospheric air which has been breathed in by the organism from the foreign particles, and it humidifies the air and then brings the air to the body temperature. Now let's understand each part of it. The conducting part contains a pair of nostrils which is opening out above the upper lips. It leads to nasal passage. This nasal passage leads to nasal chamber, and this nasal chamber opens next into nasopharynx. This nasopharynx is actually a portion of pharynx, and pharynx is a common passage for both food and air. Nasopharynx opens through glottis into the larynx region. Larynx is the sound box, and from the larynx region the air passages open into the trachea. Trachea is a straight tube extending up to the mid thoracic cavity. Larynx is actually a cartilaginous box which helps in sound production, and hence it is called the sound box. It so happens during swallowing, the glottis is covered by a thin elastic cartilaginous flap called epiglottis, which prevents the entry of food into the larynx. So this is a beautiful mechanism wherein there is a flap, thin flap, cartilaginous flap called epiglottis, which closes the glottis so that the food does not enter the larynx, and so the food is directed onto the esophagus tract. Next, let's continue our understanding. Trachea further divides at the level of fifth thoracic vertebra into the right and the left primary bronchi. So trachea is dividing into right and left primary bronchi in the fifth thoracic vertebra. Each bronchus undergoes repeated divisions to form the secondary and tertiary bronchi, and the miniature branch, we call it as the bronchioles, and bronchioles end up in very thin terminal bronchioles. The trachea, primary bronchi, secondary bronchi, tertiary bronchi and initial bronchioles are supported by incomplete cartilaginous rings, which we call it as the C rings because it resembles like the alphabet C. It's not a complete ring, it's only a semi ring, so we call it as the C cartilage, which prevents their collapsing. Otherwise the tracts may collapse. So in order to prevent that, they are being lined with what are called as the C cartilage. Each terminal bronchiole again ends up in a very thin irregular vascularized bag like structure called alveoli. In fact, alveoli are the structural and functional unit of lungs. Now I'll just quickly summarize the passage of the air. First is external nostrils, then the air enters nasal passage, then to the nasal chamber or the nasal cavity, then to the nasopharynx, then to the glottis, then to larynx, from larynx into the trachea, then trachea into the primary bronchi, from primary bronchi to secondary bronchi, secondary bronchi to tertiary bronchi, tertiary bronchi to bronchioles, from bronchioles to terminal bronchioles, then to the respiratory bronchioles, and finally to the alveolar duct, which is ending in the alveoli. So that's about the first part, that is the air passages, which is called the conducting part. Now let's understand about the lungs, the second part. Lungs are situated in the thoracic chamber and is resting on diaphragm. Lung is having two parts, right lung and left lung. Again, right lung has three lobes and left lung has two lobes. Right lung is larger and left lung is smaller. For the reason, in the left side there is presence of the liver. So therefore, left lung is having only two lobes. So what are the lobes of the right lung? Anterior lobe, middle lobe and posterior lobe. And left lung is having only two lobes, namely anterior lobe and the posterior lobe. There is no middle lobe there. Next, lungs are covered by double layered membrane called pleura. This pleura is a outer pleura and there is a inner pleura. The outer pleura, the outer layer of the pleura is called parietal pleura. And the inner layer of the pleura is called visceral pleura. In between these two layers, there is a space called interpleural space, which is filled with pleural fluid. And what is the use of this pleural fluid? It lubricates the surface of the lungs and prevents the friction between the membranes. So what are the things the lungs consisting of? It consists of the bronchi, which is entering into the lungs, and it branches into primary, secondary, tertiary bronchi, and then into the bronchioles and the alveoli. These are the composition of the lungs. Alveoli and their ducts form respiratory or exchange part of the respiratory system. As I already told you, what are alveoli? Alveoli are the structural and functional units of lungs. Now let's get into some more detail regarding the exchange part in the lungs. The actual diffusion of air is happening in the lungs. Thoracic cavity is an airtight cavity. It is formed dorsally by vertebral column and ventrally by sternum, laterally by ribs, and on the lower side by diaphragm. Any exchange in the thoracic cavity is reflected in the lung cavity. The lung cavity is also called pulmonary cavity. Now, respiration involves the following steps. The first step, pulmonary ventilation or pulmonary breathing, or simply called breathing, in which atmospheric air is drawn in and carbon dioxide rich alveolar air is thrown out. Next step, gaseous exchange between alveoli and blood. Next step, gas transport, that is oxygen transport and carbon dioxide transport, where the diffusion of oxygen and carbon dioxide between the blood and the tissues will happen. Next, utilization of oxygen by the cells for catabolic reactions, which can release in the production of carbon dioxide as a resultant product. And this process we call it as cellular respiration or tissue respiration. So that's about the human respiratory system parts and the steps of respiration. In the next episode, let's understand regarding mechanism of breathing. Keep practicing. All the best. Hello dear students, welcome to BIC's audio learning session on the chapter of breathing and exchange of gases. In this episode, we are going to learn more about regulation of respiration and disorders of respiratory system. Let's begin. Let's first take up regulation of respiration understanding. Respiratory centers are present in the brain, and it includes respiratory rhythm center, pneumotaxis center, chemosensitive area. Let's understand each one of them. Respiratory rhythm center, also called inspiratory and expiratory centers, which is present in the medulla oblongata. Now let's look into pneumotaxis center. It is present in pons, pons veroli, of the hind brain. This pneumotaxis center moderates the functions of respiratory rhythm center. Neural signals from this center reduces the duration of inspiration and thereby alter the rate of respiration. Next, let us look into chemosensitive area. It is seen present adjacent to the rhythm center. Increase in the concentration of carbon dioxide and hydrogen ion activates this center. I repeat, increase in the concentration of carbon dioxide and hydrogen ion activates the chemosensitive area center, which in turn signals the rhythm center. Receptors in the aortic arch and carotid artery also recognize the changes in carbon dioxide and hydrogen ion concentration, and they also send signals to the rhythm center, that is to the medulla oblongata. Role of oxygen in the regulation of respiratory rhythm is quite insignificant. Now let's understand regarding the disorders of respiratory system. Three important disorders we are going to understand: asthma, emphysema, and occupational respiratory disorders. Let's look into each one of them. First, let us discuss about asthma. Asthma is difficulty in breathing, causing wheezing due to inflammation of bronchi and bronchioles. Emphysema, next disorder of our discussion. Damage of alveolar walls decreases the respiratory surface, and this is the case with respect to emphysema. The major cause of emphysema is smoking of cigarette. Next, occupational respiratory disorders. Certain industries produce so much dust, so the defense mechanism of the body cannot cope up with the situation. Long exposure to this dust causes inflammation of the lungs, leading to fibrosis. Fibrosis means proliferation of fibrous tissues. It finally results in lung damage. This is observed in the workers of industries, and such workers should wear protective masks to protect themselves from suffering from the occupational disorders. So that's about the understanding of this lesson of breathing and exchange of gases. Keep practicing. All the best.